The U.S. imposes sanctions against Iran over alleged drone deliveries to Russia for use in the Ukraine war. A railway strike in the UK enters its last day as the government mulls action to make it harder for key workers to walk out. And the US House of Representatives finally names a new speaker after repeated failures unseen in over a century. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, the U.S. accuses Iran of providing Russia with drones to be used in the war in Ukraine and has now imposed new sanctions on the manufacturer of the drones. And this is while Iran says it did send drones to Russia, but that was before the start of the war and not for the use in the conflict. We discuss the matter further in our news review program. Let's take a quick listen to that.
U.S. has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran, this time targeting suppliers of drones that Washington claims Russia has been using in its war in Ukraine. The sanctions targeted six executives and board members of the Quds Aviation Industries. The U.S. Treasury Department described the industries as key Iranian defense manufacturer responsible for designing and producing drones. The sanctions also targeted the director of Iran's Aerospace Industries Organization. That measures freeze any U.S.-based assets of those targeted individuals and ban Americans from dealing with them. Iran has denied allegations that it's provided Russia with drones to be used in the war in Ukraine. Tehran says it did send drones to Russia, but that was before the start of the war in February. Moscow has also denied using Iranian drones in Ukraine. And now joining us for the program is Yusuf Azizi, Iranian affairs expert, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Firaz Al-Najim, human rights activist, joining us from Ottawa. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there in Ottawa with you, Firaz. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in cold Canada. Your initial thoughts on the story? We've seen so many sanctions. We've seen this drone thing being tossed around. We know that as of a couple years ago, Iran is free to sell arms wherever it sees fit. And this is an unfolding story. Your thought, where we stand today with this?
Yes, I mean, the U.S. is biased, and they're trying to kind of put some more maximum pressure on Iran, because with this recent plot and the so-called Iranian revolution inside Iran, they failed miserably, and they weren't successful with their project. So now they're trying to still push some pressure on Iran and try to kind of, like, defame the situation, manipulate it. I mean, you know, Russia doesn't really need Iran, I mean, to supply them with drones, you know, in this battle with Ukraine. I think Russia has a lot of other allies they can always buy weapons from. And, you know, this if they really cared about international law and they cared about, you know, caring about, like, human rights and things like this, what they claim, they would arrest Trump, because yesterday we heard the news from Iraq is that they issued a arrest warrant for the former president of the U.S. That killed a general in Iraq, Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi, with a drone. So we're talking about drones right now, right? So this is by the highest court in Iraq that they have issued a warrant. So the first thing they should have done before they put sanctions on Iran is first, you know, implement the laws in your own land that that were breached by the former president. So anyways, I mean, this is all just a way to exploit any seditions and problems inside Iran, and they want to blame the problems that they're doing inside Ukraine on Iran. They want, you know, they're sending massive amounts of weapons, and lots of mercenaries are going inside Ukraine to fight against Russia, and they're okay supplying weapons to whoever they want. They're okay with supplying drones to Saudi Arabia, that is one of the worst human rights violators in the world, and they have caused the worst humanitarian crisis in Yemen. And they're continuing to sell them weapons, and they're not putting those sanctions on them, and they're not talking about human rights when it has to do with the Yemeni people. So it shows you this is all hypocrisy and double standard. It's all it's about the interest of their control, you know, their colonial project in West Asia. What about Israel? How come they haven't imposed sanctions on Israel for using drones against the people of Gaza that have been blockaded for so many years? You know, where is the equality and where is the real justice?
Thank you, Firaz and Yusuf. Welcome to the program. Now, Yusuf, you have nuclear powers that try to tell Iran it cannot have a peaceful nuclear program. You have powers that make a fortune, $1 trillion a year, selling arms, especially to Iran's adversaries. We've seen them, to Firaz's point, they give weapons to the Saudis that we know are being used to commit war crimes on women and children in Yemen. They give them to the Israelis that we know are being used to commit war crimes in the Gaza Strip and against other Palestinians, if not Lebanese, at some point in time in history, if you very well know. What do they care about Iran's drone program?
That's true. I would add that, this kind of sanction against Iran military personnel or organization doesn't have any real impact on the current status of Iran-U.S. relation or Iran's economic situation, because the maximum pressure campaign that President Trump issued on Iran is still continued by the Biden administration. So nothing can do more about Iran's economic isolation by the West. And these kind of sanctions against Iranian military personnel or organization is just make us laugh, because nobody's in Iran, in the military, in the IRGC, they don't have any kind of assets outside of Iran that Western countries could get all of those or freeze those. So what's happening is that the Biden administration doing and continue the maximum pressure, not just on economic issues, but it is a hybrid war against Iran. It is a propaganda against Iran. So it is a full range of using all of the American tools in international affairs. It is covert action. It is military action. It is diplomacy, everything against Iran to come to the negotiation with the limits and terms that United States accept, not Iran, which I'm talking about the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. So the last point is that, the United States sanction against Iran is not working, as it has not been working since the revolution, the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran. And we can see that Iran has more power in nuclear industry, in military industry, in regional issues, missiles, drones, everything. So what's happening and what can United States change Iranian behavior? It's just going to revive the original JCPOA. Just imagine if Biden administration, in the first month he came to the White House, he revived, he pushed, he encouraged, he do lots of his in his power to revive the JCPOA. I'm sure that if the JCPOA revived before the war erupted in the Eastern Europe, and nowadays the whole situation in international politics would be different. Iranian oil would go to the free market, especially in Europe. The energy crisis that the Western countries, especially the European countries, is now facing would be limited. And also the kind of cooperation between Iran and Russia wouldn't be happening. So all of the blames will go for Biden administration, who claimed before he came to the power that he changed the policy of Trump against Iran, but actually he continues that.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us in the program. Mr. Yusuf Azizi joining us from Washington, D.C., and Firaz al-Najim there joining us from Ottawa, Canada. And that brings us to the end of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Iran has hosted a conference on slain Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. He was assassinated in the U.S. air raid in Iraq in 2020, Yusuf Jalali reports.
3 years have passed since the U.S. assassination of top Iranian military commander General Qasem Soleimani. This is one of the dozens of commemoration ceremonies that have been held across Iran. Senior military and state officials attend a gathering in Tehran to pay their respect to General Soleimani.
Martyr Soleimani was the forerunner of all the martyrs who lost their lives in the fight against terrorism. That's why his name continues to be remembered by Iranians.
Not only did the American authorities committed this crime, but they openly took responsibility for it. We have been following up on our legal pursuit with the cooperation of Iraq's judiciary to bring the perpetrators to justice.
Soleimani was the commander of a branch of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps called the Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed on January 3, 2020, in a drone strike outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Millions took part in his funeral, both in Iraq and Iran. Now, on his third assassination anniversary, Iranians still feel the loss.
It's been 3 years now that we lost our commander. We call him the Commander of Hearts because he fought Daesh overseas to keep the terrorists at bay and prevent them from entering our soil. We owe our security to General Soleimani.
General Soleimani is known for his role in eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists.
People here say General Soleimani's assassination gave a clear clue about who is who in the fight against terrorism in the region. They say the U.S. killed the nemesis of Daesh, and that corroborates Trump's claim that America created Daesh. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Israel's new cabinet is already stepping up pressure against Palestinians, including those it holds in prison. Tel Aviv is angry over the Palestinians' appeal at the International Court of Justice. The regime says it will impose a moratorium on some Palestinian construction and place financial and political sanctions against the Palestinian Authority. Israel says the measures are a response to the PA's decision to wage political and legal war against Israel. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has reacted to the Israeli announcement, saying the measures won't block the nation's efforts to end the Israeli occupation. Meanwhile, an Israeli minister has paid a visit to an Israeli prison, saying he aims to ensure Palestinians' prisoners' conditions will not improve. Hamas has slammed the visit, calling the plans against Palestinian detainees an unprecedented criminal act.
The visit by the minister of the fascist Israeli regime, Itamar Ben-Gvir, to Nafha prison with the aim of harassing the prisoners is an unprecedented criminal act against them.
Hamas stressed that what the Israeli regime is planning is a dangerous escalation. It said the Palestinian people will not be standing idly by while the Israeli forces enforce such schemes. The newly formed Israeli cabinet is headed by Benjamin Netanyahu and involves members of extremist Israeli parties. And this cabinet is widely viewed as the most far right in the regime's history. The new measures come after months of Israeli violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank that's been unprecedented in nearly 20 years. Regime forces killed more than 220 Palestinians in 2022. Turning to other news now, a strike by UK railway workers has entered its fifth and final day, with thousands of signalers and train crew walking out. Only about one in five trains across the country is running on Saturday. Passengers have already been advised to avoid taking trains. Union leaders are due to meet the rail minister on Monday to resolve a dispute over pay. The workers want better pay and working conditions at the time when inflation has soared to a record levels in the UK. The action is the latest in strikes in the past months over the same issue, involving different sectors from nurses to teachers. The government is now planning to introduce a new law that would make it harder for key workers to strike. The legislation forces them to maintain a basic level of service during strike time or face dismissal. And the U.S. has announced the new military aid package for Ukraine worth $3 billion this time. The White House says the package is expected to include MRAP armored personnel carriers and self-propelled howitzers. The U.S. is also planning to provide Ukraine with Bradley armored vehicles, and this as Germany says it plans to send 40 modern armored fighting vehicles to Ukraine as part of a new phase of Western military support for Kiev. The announcement was made following a phone call between German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and U.S. President Joe Biden. Germany says a Patriot anti-aircraft missile system from Army stocks is also to be delivered to Ukraine in the first quarter of this year. France, meanwhile, said it was arranging for the delivery of tanks to Ukraine. Russia says the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase the suffering of its people. And the race is just over. The U.S. House of Representatives finally elects a new speaker after 15 rounds of voting this week. Kevin McCarthy from California won the post after defeats over 4 days caused by Republican infighting. A group of 20 hardline Republicans were against McCarthy. They had cited a lack of trust on him over political issues with President Joe Biden and the Democratic-held Senate. McCarthy gave concessions to be able to get the post. He's succeeding Democrat Nancy Pelosi. Republicans took control of the U.S. House in November elections. The latest race to name a new speaker was the longest in 160 years. Biden has congratulated McCarthy and says he's ready to work with the Republicans. That brings an end to our World Bulletin. Thank you for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
British retail consortium figures come amid concern over economy and rising cost of energy bills. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Guardian reported UK food price rises soared to a record rate in December 2022. Figures show, as retail industry bosses warned that high inflation would continue in 2023 amid the fallout from surging energy bills. Annual food inflation jumped to 13.3% in December 2022, up from 12.4% in November, according to the latest monthly report from trade body, the British Retail Consortium, BRC, and the data from Nielsen. The BRC said this was the highest monthly rate since it began collecting data in 2005. highlighting the presence on households during the festive shopping season. The industry snapshot showed the price of many essential foods rose sharply as the reverberations from the Russia-Ukraine crisis continued to drive up energy costs. The BRC said high prices for animal feed, fertilizer and energy fed into higher food prices on supermarket shelves, while warning that consumers would probably face further increases in 2023. It was a challenging Christmas for many households across the UK, said the BRC's chief executive, Helen Dickinson, adding, 2023 will be another difficult year for consumers and businesses as inflation shows no immediate signs of waning. The figures came as concerns grew about the strength of the British economy, with the headline inflation rates at its highest level since the early 1980s, driven by soaring gas and electricity bills. Manufacturers suffered a further downturn in activity in December 2022, with production, new orders and employment all in decline. The S&P Global SIPS UK Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index fell to a 31-month low of 45.3 in December 2022, down from 46.5 in November 2022, indicating a fifth successive month of contraction in UK factory output. Domestic and overseas demand remained lackluster as the industry suffered a weak end to 2022. With companies facing rising costs, increasing market volatility and problems related to Brexit for firms with EU-based customers. John Glenn, the chief economist at the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply, said new orders dropped at one of the fastest rates in over a decade as overseas customers were put off by Brexit custom requirements, pushing up costs and delays, and domestic orders were affected by the general pressure from rising prices. As the soaring costs fed through to consumers, households sharply cut back on spending in recent months. Figures from Barclays show retail sales fell overseas in 2022, while high street footfall slumped last week at a time when consumers would usually be hitting the shops for the Boxing Day sales. According to the BRC figures for December 2022, when households usually stock up on Christmas food and other things, the inflation rate for fresh produce accelerated to a new record of 15% in December, up from 14.3% a month earlier. However, retailers offering steep discounts on non-food products helped to bring December's overall shop price inflation figure down a little to 7.3% from 7.4% the month before, as high street stores and online retailers looked to shed excess stock built up during periods of disruption to supply chains earlier in 2022. Aldi said it had experienced record Christmas sale as more shoppers tend to the discount chain amid the cost of living crisis. The retailer said sales jumped by 26% in December to top £1.4 billion in the UK and Ireland for the first time. The discounter highlighted strong sales of fresh meat products, with poultry 28% for the month. Chilled dessert sales rose by 30%, while sales of cheese increased by about 50%. Snacks such as crisps and nuts were up more than 40% as the World Cup coincided with the Christmas period for the first time. Dickinson said businesses struggling with soaring energy costs urgently required support from the government The Chancellor Jeremy Hunt confirmed in the run-up to Christmas that he was preparing an extension in financial support for businesses with high energy bills, which would be announced early in the new year. According to ABC, with expectations that about 710,000 households across the UK will struggle to pay for warm clothing, heating and food this winter, residents in Burnley have resorted to cutting back on electricity use as much as possible. The wage issue was cast into sharp relief this month when workers took industrial action almost every day across a range of sectors. The UK faced widespread disruptions as everyone from postal workers to nurses, security staff and airport employees walked off the job, demanding better pay rises and conditions. One of the big challenges we are facing in the UK at the moment, for example, is a strike action of workers not being happy with the pay that are being offered in the face of high inflation and taking industrial action, Mr. Zoranko said. It comes at a strange time in the UK's job market, with businesses struggling to recruit enough staff as a growing number of people leave the workforce altogether. Also, Mr. Ivan said the post-pandemic labour market feels pretty weird overall. We've got the situation where we've got record vacancies, we've got employers hiring at record rates, but employment is still 300,000. Below pre-pandemic levels, where in most other advanced economies, it is above pre-pandemic levels. Mr. Evans has been following the UK's workforce exodus for months and says there are two main reasons why people are leaving. Mr. Evans says, we estimate that there is about 1 million fewer people in the labour market than if pre-pandemic trends had continued, and that's mostly driven by over 50s leaving the labour market and also people with long-term sickness. While more research is needed, Mr. Ivan said those leaving due to long-term sickness may in part be a lingering effect of the pandemic. Amid growing cases of long COVID and people suffering mental health conditions in the UK, Mr. Zoranko said, where we are now, the economic outlook is bleak. It's going to be a painful couple of years. For households, it's going to be a couple of years being squeezed by energy prices, followed by a couple of years being squeezed by interest rates, probably. Some pockets of the UK are likely to be harder hit than others, according to Father Alex, saying, I think there was a bit of a celebration that COVID-19 was all over this year, but the actual legacy of the pandemic in places of urban deprivation, such as Burnley, is that the impacts are massive.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
The Spotlight.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Peace in Ukraine remains elusive, at least for the time being. First, the unending Western supply of arms continues, led by the U.S. Second, even a temporary truce announced by Russia for Orthodox Christmas for a little over 36 hours, but was rejected by the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky outright, practically within minutes. Meanwhile, the death toll mounts. Economics around the world are suffering. World food supply remains at a fragile state, and the threat of a nuclear war, that still remains a possibility. Our guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, Marcus Papadopoulos. He's a historian, political analyst, and author who joins us from London. Marcus Papadopoulos, welcome. Let's take a look at this Christmas truce that was outright rejected. And it was very interesting in the way that it came out, because we went breaking news with it. But then almost like within 10 minutes or so, it was rejected outright by the presidential aide, I forget his name, but in a tweet. In which it did not go for the offer that Putin had for a 36-hour ceasefire for Orthodox Christmas. What does that say about Ukraine?
Well, first of all, what it demonstrates is that Zelensky is not an independent operator. He is a puppet of the West's, principally of America's and Britain's. Perhaps, and this is just perhaps, deep down, Zelensky regrets having taken on the position as president in the first place. And also, perhaps, he would like to sign a truce with Russia. We witnessed last year evidence emerge that just a few weeks into the Russian military campaign in Ukraine, Zelensky was prepared to sign a truce with the Russian government, but the Americans and the British overruled him. They forbade him from doing so, and therefore he had to keep on fighting against Russia. So it came as no surprise to me that the latest offer by Russia for a truce was rejected. Officially, of course, the truce was rejected by Zelensky, by the Ukrainian government, but in practice, it was rejected by the West. The West is utterly indifferent to the suffering of the Ukrainian population. And of course, the West is indifferent to the suffering of its own people, because the economic war, which is ongoing between the West and Russia, is taking a horrific toll on the lives of ordinary people in, for example, America and Britain. And yet, the Western ruling elites are not only continuing with this war, they are also adding more and more fuel to the war, despite the amount of people in Britain and America falling into poverty.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask both of you to put on your military hats in the analytical form and tell us what these moves, militarily speaking, means, which is in the form of weapons. Let me bring in Don DeBar, activist and commentator, who joins us from Austin, New York. Don DeBar, welcome. Season's greetings. Taking a look at the weapons side of the story, the U.S. and its allies. Overall, they are now promising to deliver a variety of armored fighting vehicles to Ukraine. Let's start out with Germany. They're going to supply Mardar fighting vehicles and Leopard tanks. And Germany is very adamant that it wants to do that, but yet it wants also other countries to step up. And we've heard France at this point, who will send light AMX-10RC armored combat vehicles. I mean, I'm mentioning the model names. I don't know what they are, but I think they may mean something, because it's like a slow motion grade. We keep getting elevated in terms of the weaponry. And then you have the U.S. weapons, which is called the what? The Bradley Fighting Vehicles, buddy to Abraham tanks.
Yeah.
So you're having these three countries, at least from what we know, as our guest there said, adding fuel to the fire. What difference will these three countries' weaponry assistance to Ukraine mean?
Yeah, first of all, season's greetings to everyone there also. And I've appreciated working with you over these years, and I look forward to that this coming year as well.
Indeed.
You know, first of all, you know, you're running the names by. They might as well be numbers of bank accounts. This is a self-sustaining, the Holocaust in the making, basically. So self-financing. They buy weapons, quote-unquote, but they buy them with our money. And then they, you know, pay the money to themselves, so they get rich in the process. Then they direct, because they have control of the weapons also, they direct the weapons at places that will increase their ability to extract value around the world. And whatever happens in the aftermath of that is our problem to deal with. Refugees being driven from the places that are being blown up. A complete fragmentation of everyone else except for the small group of people that have the leash on all of these things. This is what's going on here. In terms of the particular weaponry, I mean, we've been watching weaponry get installed around Russia and China for decades, you know, since 1945, in any event. When I was just listening today to a speech of Henry Wallace made at Madison Square Garden, March 31st, 1947. And this is when the Cold War was really starting to roll. It's around the time the CIA was created, the National Security Act, the Truman Doctrine proclaimed, et cetera, et cetera. And he said very clearly then, and it's been proven, like, I don't know, 30 different data points since at least, that the so-called threat from Russia is really an opening for the U.S. to grab oil for the military. And that's what was happening then, and that's still what's been happening. That they now see the oil and gas wells in Siberia that are potentially and being applied right now to being the fuel tanks as for the engine of growth in Eurasia, China, Russia, the SCO, the bulk of the rest of humanity outside of the golden billion in Europe and the leadership in the United States. That has been a prize that they've wanted to capture since the 19th century. And certainly the details of it were spelled out by Adolf Hitler in 1922 in his jail cell when he was penning his little tome. Right now, the most frightening aspect to me, which looks sort of like the closing move, is the announcement by Fumio Kishida that Japan is going to strengthen its military ties with the United States. Now, Japan is under military occupation for the last 77 years by the United States. Okinawa is a military base and not much else.
Right.
That's the people on the island. And Japan has, you know, gone to war with Russia and China half a dozen times over the last 150 years. They caused huge damage. They killed millions of people in Korea and Japan, mm-hmm. and China, and also much damage to Russia. And this is a country that last month announced that they now want offensive missiles so they can produce a counterstrike.
Sure.
When Article 9 of their Constitution reads, and I'll quote it, that in order to accomplish the aim of the preceding paragraph, which is international peace based on justice and order, land, sea, and air forces, as well as other war potential, will never be sustained. Uh-huh. The right of belligerency of the state will not be recognized. This is their constitution, and now they're building a mass. They're going to have to be the third largest military power in the world at the end of this year.
Indeed.
And that is obviously being targeted at Russia.
Sure.
So, you know, the weapons are being installed across the board.
The thing here is, when we take it, Marcus Papadopoulos, when we take a look at the way that they're upgrading the assistance militarily, it's like a slow-motion train. And they're doing it slowly and surely. That in itself must mean, and I'm guessing, I'm asking you, doesn't that mean that what they had was not good enough because the Russian army was prevailing on the ground, so they have to upgrade it? Because every time that they're going for an upgrade, you hear things like what the what Schultz has said. And I'm going to read off the words that he used. Hesitating before, this is a word from the periodical that I got, hesitating before sending powerful weapons for fear of risking direct conflict with Moscow. It's the same thing that the U.S. says. What are they afraid of exactly?
the West and Russia are fighting four wars against each other in relation to Ukraine. The first is a military war. The second is an economic war. The third is an information war. And the fourth is a culture war. Russia is winning the military war and the economic war, while the West is winning the information war. The outcome of the culture war will be decided by whomever emerges victorious in the military war. And I have no doubt whatsoever that Russia will emerge victorious, which takes me to the reason as to why the Western ruling elites have sent so much military hardware to Ukraine that they have depleted their own stockpiles and, as a consequence of that, have jeopardized their own fighting abilities. They have jeopardized their own national security. So it is my submission that the ultimate reason as to why the Western ruling elites have sent vast amounts of money and colossal amounts of military hardware to Ukraine is to preserve Western global hegemony, because the American ruling elites, together with the British ruling elites, understand that if Russia emerges victorious in Ukraine, then either all of Ukraine or most of Ukraine will be absorbed into the Russian Federation, which will enhance even further Russia's status as a superpower, which will mean that an even more powerful Russia will be able to not just block American military adventures wherever they may be in the world, right, but it will also speed up Russia's dismantling of the world order, which has existed since the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
So whatever weaponry the Americans and the British and the Germans and the Canadians send to Ukraine, this will not alter the eventual outcome of the war, which will be a Russian victory.
Well, Don DeBar, this is where the, when I asked for you guys to wear your military hat, this is where I think the signal couldn't be stronger, which Medvedev sent out, the deputy chairman of the Security Council of the Russian Federation, where he said, quote, "The main gift for the new year, with an ammunition package of Zircon missiles left yesterday for the shores of NATO countries." That's referring to the deployment of a warship with hypersonic cruise missiles, 9 times the speed of sound, and it has a range of 1,000 kilometers. And when we heard Putin, I don't know if you saw the video, but Putin was speaking with a smirk, delivering that message. So we know what these hypersonic missiles are capable of doing. That's a direct message that we can target anywhere and you can't stop us. Now, are they going to realize that, or are they going to keep this gradual incremental upgrades of weaponry assistance?
Well, first of all, assuming that Marcus's thesis is correct, you know, I'm guessing mi budem govorit po-ruski. It's a threat.
Don DeBar, we're getting cut off. We're getting on and off. We're getting you on and off here. Let's try to fix that. We have to correct you. Marcus, so that question goes to you. The hypersonic missiles, again, that's a direct message. It couldn't be clearer from Vladimir Putin when he delivered it. So we know that what that is capable of doing, and we know how they, meaning Ukraine, the U.S., NATO countries, et cetera, why don't they have a grasp on that and move more towards perhaps talks, which obviously they're not in that ball field yet?
Well, first of all, when America and Russia are fighting a proxy war against each other, it has the potential to escalate into a direct confrontation between America and Russia, which would first of all manifest itself in a conventional war and then quickly escalate into a nuclear war. But at the same time, America and Russia know how to maintain peace between themselves. Whatever you hear the Americans and the Russians saying about one another in public is quite different to what they are saying to each other in private. And we should be exceedingly grateful for that, because the Americans and the Russians, ever since the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis, have maintained direct relations between each other. The political and military and the political and military elites of America and Russia talk to each other every single day of the year, year on year. So they know how to maintain peace, because otherwise a war between themselves would see both countries annihilated. And in that situation, they would take the rest of the world with them. Okay. But of course, there is always the risk for an accidental war, and always the risk of a misinterpretation, which could lead to a war between the two. But I don't think that will happen. But still, you ask, why will the West not sit down and talk, negotiate? Because they know what is at stake. They have to achieve a military victory in Ukraine to preserve Western global hegemony. Okay. The Americans do not wish to live in a world where they have to share power with, for example, Russia and also China. They wish to be the sole dominant power, which dictates to every other country in the world.
Right, they like to hold on to that. Maybe that explains why Don DeBar, the U.S. embassy to Russia, released actually a video, from what we understand, that called for an appeal to the people of Russia. And it went on to use, in this 50-second clip, images of the impact of bombing in Ukraine, that was happening. It's not worthy of you, that we stand in solidarity with each of you who are striving to create a more peaceful future. So we're seeing the U.S. actually want to provoke Russians to, as usual, I must say, based on the track record, for them to turn against Putin and his special military operation. Is that what the U.S. is trying to do here?
Well, Marcus pointed to it, and folks know this. There's an information war that's a component of what the new hybrid war style. I think people in Europe, who, of course, are not able to see it unless they really look for it, should look for a similar piece produced by Russia's propaganda ministry or whatever, that basically, I think it's a 60-second piece. It shows three scenes of a family in the winter of 2021, 2022, and 2023, prospectively. And if you look for it, the question is, what happened to the hamster? Look, there's a war going on. The war is one of acquisition by the West. They moved their material in over the past, again, since 1945, but certainly accelerating since the Obama administration. And the Russians see it. They have satellites, and they know what it means when somebody walks into the house and points a gun at every member of the family. And they decided it's time to fight back, that they had an opportunity to prepare their defenses, and they are countering offensive capabilities to a point where they could win a war if they had to. They didn't seek the war.
Sir, Don DeBar, I'm really sorry to cut you off, because we're fresh out of time. I do apologize for that. But thank you very much, Don DeBar, activist and commentator from Austin, New York. Thank you so much, Don. And Marcus Papadopoulos, a pleasure, historian, political analyst, and author from London. And with that, we come to the end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Batagoy and the team, it's goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though, we learn...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Today, we want to talk about the Muslim Ummah is out of time. Please stay tuned. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is Foresight. Now, the Muslim Ummah has been devastated ever since the breaking of the Ottoman Empire post-World War I. The imperialist colonialist empires such as Britain and France and even the United States came in and carved up the Middle East by means of the Sykes-Picot Agreement. The Ottoman Empire was subsequently broken up into different, smaller, disunited pieces, which had arbitrary borders based upon no logical or geographical order. Now, instead of creating independent states, the carving up of the Ottoman Empire just resulted in the fighting and the nationalist agendas of various races and ethnic tribes. And even within each nation created by the imperialist colonialist powers, there were different indigenous peoples and ethnicities which end up warring and fighting with each other. So the Ottoman Empire, which had some form of Muslim unity, was conveniently broken up, and ever since then, Muslim unity has only been a dream. The Muslim Ummah had broken up into Shia and Sunni, into Arab and Persian, into Iraqi and Irani, into Saudi and Qatari, into Indian and Pakistani, into Afghan and Yemeni, into Turk and Fars, into Sindhi and Balochi, and honestly, the list just continues on and on regarding the various facets that the Muslims had separated themselves into. In reality, the Muslims fell deeper and deeper into a slumber, which was only leading up to their eventual death. Indeed, the Muslim Ummah was out of time, but it seems that Allah had a different plan for the Muslim Ummah.
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now let's listen to Sheikh Mansour Lighai, who's going to talk about today's topic.
In a nutshell, Imam Hussein al-Islam says, the reason that you people are so deviated from the right path and you are committing such a big crime is because your stomach is filled up with haram. Because you are what you eat. It forms your souls, our personalities. Ya ayyuhan nas kulu mimma fil ard halalan tayyiba wa la tattabi'u khutuwat ash-shaytan innahu lakum aduwwun mubin. So Quran says that of things that are made permissible, meaning the food that you take matters in your personality. What you say, what you hear matters, because kolu, remember, it's not only eat in the form of a morsel of food, it also includes what you listen to, what we watch, what we touch matters, and so forth. You are in fact sending food to your souls. Quran says that watch, don't let any stranger come in. Make sure what comes in is halal and tayyib. Ya Adam uskun anta wa zawjuka al-jannah wa kula minha ragadan haythu shi'tuma wa la taqrabu hadhihi ash-shajara. There is only one forbidden tree. Do not approach that tree. If you approach it, then you are going to create a problem for yourself. Fatakuna min al-zalimin. Quran says, or you'll be one of the zalimin. They did it, they became one of the wrongdoers, and that's why they had to plead to God. Imam Baqir alayhi salam in a hadith, he says, إِنَّ الرَّجُلَ إِذَا أَصَابَ مَالًا مِنْ حَرَامٍ لَمْ يُقْبَلْ مِنْهُ حَجٌّ وَلَا عُمْرَةٌ وَلَا صِلَةُ رَحِمٍ حَتَّى أَنَّهُ يَفْسُدُ فِيهِ الْفَارْجُ. When a man earns some money from a haram way, his hajj on the Day of Judgment is not accepted. Isn't it a tragedy? Majlis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam that he fed or helped is not accepted. Charity, contribution, donation to the poor, to the relatives is not accepted. Why not? Because the Imam says God is pure, inna la tayyib, and only accepts the pure things. Imam says that even if the sources of my income is haram, it's going to affect my marriage relation. My relation with my spouse, my children, or vice versa will be affected. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that a brick in a house that is made from haram income is a guarantee for the collapsing and for the ruining of that house, not whether physically or breaking a marriage. Either way, it has its effect. The Imam in his sermon on the Day of Ashura again, he says, فَقَدْ مُلَأَتْ بُطُونُكُمْ مِنَ الْحَرَامِ. Your stomachs are filled with haram, and that's why you don't listen to me. Or when you listen, it does not avail you. Although you pray, your prayer does not prevent you from fahsha, from committing atrocity. Because there was no soul, there's no spirit in their prayers. Because they were praying, but their income was from haram. And it's something very important for us to learn. Hopefully, if Imam Mahdi Ajallah Farajul Sharif at our time appears, God forbid we are not like Kufans.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير، أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
يا الله يا رحمن حقق أمانينا وفقنا في كل آن في مسائنا.
Welcome back to listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Foresight, and let's continue our discussion. So we talked about how the Muslim Ummah was in such a deep slumber, a coma, if you will, which was leading up to its eventual death.